Well, Joshua 4, I want to just make a small point about these 12 stones. There were 12 stones, verse 9, set up in the midst of the Jordan, and yet we know from verse 20 there were 12 stones set up at Gilgal, where they lodged that night. So I suggest that there were 12 stones left as a memorial in the midst of the Jordan River, and 12 stones at Gilgal. It's as if there was both a visible and an invisible memorial to the hand of God at this time in bringing Israel over the Jordan, making it dry up so that they could pass over it. And that is indeed how things are, that there is a visible and an invisible memorial to all God's work. But the point I want to make is that those stones were fairly small. You see from verse 5, each stone could be carried upon a shoulder. They were not big stones. And so you think of the tables upon which the Ten Commandments were written. They were also quite small. You can work that out when you look at the fairly small size of the box that was known as the Ark of the Covenant, that those two stones could fit inside there, along with a few other things. And, of course, Moses had them in his hands, and he threw them down and broke them when he saw the golden calf apostasy going on. So the handwriting of God was on those stones, and that also would have been quite small to fit the Ten Commandments on those stones that were small enough for Moses to comfortably carry in his hand all the way down from the top of Sinai. So the ark itself was small, and yet over it there was the glory of God himself between the cherubim. The whole scale of things in God's economy was very small indeed. When you look at the tabernacle furniture, it was small. When you look at the altar of incense and the main altar of burnt offering, that was all very small. But then David got this idea to build a temple, to sort of get the tabernacle sort of set up in one place and turn that tabernacle into a temple. Don't forget that God said straight away, I don't want that. I am a humble God in that sense, and I'm used to being carried around, as it were. The ark had rings on the side of it and poles to go through it, and he said, I'm quite content with that. Well, all right, David insisted on going ahead, and so God did dwell in that temple. But I think that David was imagining a lot of things. For example, he claims that he was given a direct set of sort of blueprints for building the temple, but he never actually tells us the size of things that God had asked for. And I do just wonder whether he was not really a case of a man getting some vision in his own head that came from himself, even though God through Nathan told him, no, I don't want this. And he goes on to extrapolate in his own mind what he thinks God's will is. For example, God said, no, I don't want you to build me a house. I'm going to build you a house, not of bricks and mortar, but of people, based around your messianic descendant, who shall be my son. And David twists that into, well, I can't build the temple because I shed so much blood in war. And Solomon likes to develop that theme and say, yeah, well, God said yes, he gave the green light to the idea that my dad had, but he said that my dad couldn't do it, but he said that I had to do it. Well, that's not at all what Nathan said. So the point is, there is a desire, a natural desire within us to think that the larger scale something is, and the sort of more grandiose it is, then the more acceptable that is to God. And you think of how there are these huge temples that are built in various religions, including in sort of Orthodox Christianity, Catholicism, etc., and equivalent really in some of the huge sort of very luxurious and chic evangelical and Pentecostal buildings that are built, worship centres, etc., which are nothing short of sort of Protestant equivalent of Catholic and Russian Orthodox temples covered with gold. I don't believe that God is in all that. God has always worked on a small scale. He asked, actually, for a minimum of sacrifice. And yet, Solomon and some of the other kings, different times, they offer absolutely thousands of animals. It must have been actually quite an awful sight, really. And rivers of blood pouring out. And God, later in Micah 6, says that, I don't want all that. Rivers of blood from sacrifices and all this kind of stuff. No, rivers of oil to me. No, I don't want that. But what does the Lord require of you but to walk humbly with your God? And I just make this point sort of triggered, really, by thinking about these 12 stones in Joshua 4. As I say, 12 of them put within the Jordan so that nobody could see them, and that they were small enough to be carried on the shoulders in verse 5 of our chapter here in Joshua 4. God works through the small things. Sometimes people say to me, why do you believe in God? You know, have you got any personal testimony? And the things that come to my mind are the little things. Coincidences, which are not coincidences, the statistical chance of them happening is just so huge that there must be the hand of God in it. And yet they are little things that might be considered too small to even bother recording or to make much of a fuss about. And yet God is in the small things. God is with the small guy. God is the God of the humble. To this man he will look, to him who is humble and of a contrite spirit and who trembles at his word. So beware of that in your service of God and in the way you look at things. God is not in the huge things. He's not in the chic, in the debonair, in the slick presentation. Look at the people who are really powerful evangelists, people who actually convert other secular people to believe in him and believe in Jesus. Those people typically are not the chic and the flash and the debonair. You look at all the flash presentations that are given in the name of evangelism, and I don't think that God necessarily works through them. He may do, and he does at times. But, for example, the person who sees the flash presentation in a church building only got into that church building because they were invited by some not very slick, not very debonair, not very flash kind of person. This is how God works, and just remember that in all your judgments, in all your decision-making, in all your attitude-forming, that what may impress man does not impress God, because he is the God of the little things, and that is actually his characteristic. You think of how he's worked through children, how when the Lord did those feeding miracles, there was a little boy who came and offered his few little loaves and small fishes. And as we often tell our children, I expect his mummy gave them to him as a packed lunch. And it was through that the Lord worked to achieve an incredible miracle. This is God's hallmark characteristic, to work through the little things and not through the grandiose.